Hi, I'm Amy Milan from Stars.
I'm Torquil Campbell. I'm in Stars too.
So, you know, the history thing is really kind of like, right? But yet people still want to know certain things. So I'm going to fill in just a couple of blanks that I know about. A friendship that started at, I believe, age 8, growing up in Toronto, moving to Williamsburg, where the idea of a band started.
So we had to be somewhere we could all live semi-legally and where we could pay the rent and not have to work 70 hours a week. So Montreal ended up being the place. We knew a few people there, and it just seemed like the right place. And we got lucky because I think we arrived in the city and started making music there at a time when there was a lot of fantastic things happening in the scene, and so we were very inspired and very sort of energized by what was around us. You say it started in Williamsburg, but really it started in Manhattan. I mean, the way a band happens is so, unless it's like you put an ad in the paper and then you get a band together, what makes a band happen is so hard to describe. It's just a series of lucky circumstances. You know, if Amy had been busy when we called her, if Evan had been not wanting to get out of his job, you know, then this band wouldn't exist. But it just, everything had to come together at the right time in the right place. And fortunately for us, it did in this circumstance. But yeah, Montreal, I think, was just that was when we decided we were really going to try and do this for real. And trying to do it for real in New York is a whole other proposition, you know?
I didn't want to move to Montreal. I'd gone to school there and I really didn't like it. I didn't really want to go, and then Torque and I got in this really big fight and he was yelling at me and telling me I had to move if I wanted to be in the band. And then I had a shrink and I told the shrink, like, it's crazy, these people are insane, I don't think I can move back to Montreal. And he said that he thought I was afraid of conflict. Well, I was at the time, but now I no longer am. You've challenged me enough that I do embrace it. So thank you, Dr. Tudors. You are the reason I moved to Montreal, and I'm at the back of the Independent doing this wonderful interview. I owe it all to you.
We'll make sure. I'll send him an email. Make sure he listens. Make sure he listens to the show.
Yeah.
We can make that happen. We can make it. Well, you know, just to continue what you were saying, Torque, because I found this quote that I really liked, which is that Montreal's, and I want to know about this because maybe we should move there. Your quote was, it's a place where you can really not have a job, spend a lot of time working on your music. We had no money, so that sounded like a good idea. So why is Montreal a city where you can get away with not having a job and work on your music? Because this is intriguing to me.
Because the economy doesn't grow. It's just a place where the economy doesn't grow. I mean, it's a big Quebecois-French capital city, but the population, the French population of Quebec is not growing. In fact, it's shrinking. And the English population of Montreal, you know, some of them are bilingual, but many of them are not bilingual, amazingly, people who are born and grow up in Montreal. So nothing gets more expensive because there's never a huge influx of people into the city. That you have to have a specific set of circumstances to make it possible for you to live there. And so one of those sets of circumstances that makes it possible is if you don't mind living in a freezing cold bedroom flat, you know, and paying $300 a month, you can do that. And you can have a jam space and you can just hang out, kind of. You really don't have to make any money at all, really. So obviously that makes it a good place to rehearse, and b, a place that attracts people so lazy and trivial that they've decided to be in a band. So yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're not a very serious person if you've decided to be in a rock and roll band. So I like that there's, you know, a lot of goofy individual spirits there, people who are just pursuing their own crazy agenda, you know, with an open heart.
What's kind of interesting is that there were huge Canadian bands in the 70s. Like huge. The Guess Who and Mahogany Rush and all of these. The Five Man Electrical Band. And these were bands that really broke through to America. They sold quite a bit of music. And I actually, scarily enough, play them to this day. Not so much in the 80s. Because the UK...
Brian Adams.
Yeah, Brian Adams. But yeah, right. Well, okay. But, you know, but the UK scene kind of really, and the new wave scene and all of that, and that wasn't a Canadian There was a little bit of it, but it wasn't. It wasn't.
It was pretty slim pickings.
It was pretty slim pickings then. Then next thing you know, the late 90s, there's that BSS band, you know, and you folks, and but even so, those bands never really defined themselves initially as bands per se. You know, the word collective came about. You know, it's a whole different thing. Now there's Broken Social Scene, the New Pornographers, the Deers, the Hidden Cameras, the Stills. And the difference is that in the 70s, a lot of the bands, I named the big bands, but there were a million bands that, due to CanCon, had a living in Canada, but never, ever, ever crossed the border. The difference now is that all these bands have crossed over in a big way.
The internet is the reason that we're all here. We didn't really have the support of major labels in our country. We did it all ourselves, and because of the blogs and because of people being able to download music without having to access it in a store, because we don't have distribution in certain countries. We do now because people in Manila like demanded it, but we wouldn't have known that like we were going to be huge in Manila. So it's really because of the internet. I mean, it really, it's, we've grown, like the whole thing started when the band started, you know. It's such an interesting thing to have watched the internet evolve, as did our music. It's we've kind of grown up together, us and the internet.
I think too that you know, Canada's a young country, and at some point cultures start to develop and they start to get more cosmopolitan and they start to have more influences. And I think, you know, Chaos and BSS and all this stuff coming out of Canada right now is evidence of a culture that has been multicultural for a long time, but has been kind of filled with individual worlds, and that it's slowly starting to define itself in ways that are quite particular. And so you have music that has European influence in it, has Caribbean influence in it, and also has American influence in it, but is in some way Canadian due to the way it's structured, which, as you say, tends to be very open and very kind of egalitarian. You know, it's not just Broken Social Scene that operates that way in Canada. I think in general, the idea of music in Canada comes out of folk music, which is gather around and pick up your guitar and play along with us, you know, and that's very much a part of the way people make music in Canada, whether they're making electronic music or African music or indie rock or whatever. So to me, it's just a fruition of something that's been happening in Canada for a long time and maybe hasn't developed to the point that it has now, you know.
But your records that you make are actually, you have to listen to them. They're made for listening to, and they're records. They're in the old school, they're albums. And, you know, whether it's In Our Bedroom After the War or Sad Robots or, you know, Five Ghosts, you know, you love approaching dark subjects and yet making the music euphoric. And I've always said my favorite type of music is the stuff that sounds really happy. But then as I'm smiling, I realize, wait a minute, I'm being taken down a really, really dark alley.
Yeah, I mean, that tension, I think, is what makes a lot of art work for people. And it's not to say that you can't do something total, you know, because Bob Marley made music that sounded easy and beautiful, and the sentiments expressed for the most part in it were easy and beautiful and hopeful. And I mean, there he talked a lot about sad things too, but I think that's, you know, everybody in this band has a pretty dark, wry sense of humor, and we're willing to go down some fairly dark alleyways to get somewhere that we find entertaining or interesting or invigorating. And, you know, the music dictates so much of what happens, because that's where the song starts. So if Chris and Evan and Pat present us with music that has a certain energy that could be used both ways, you know, there's songs like Fixed that, to me, you couldn't write a sad song to that melody. It's just too euphoric and too hopeful. You have to go with the rush of the song, you know? But I Died So I Could Haunt You has enough kind of melancholy in the melodic structure to allow the song to seem upbeat, but the story to be very, very dark and sad. And I've just always loved that tension too. Bands like The Auteurs and The Beautiful South and Smiths, obviously, and people who were able to use pop songs as sort of pulp novels, you know, kitchen sink novels. And I like that aspect of pop songwriting a lot.
What's it like to play these songs and people technically, and I underline technically, haven't heard them yet?
There's something about, you know, writing a set list and that kind of trying to figure out how to make the entire set work can be really difficult between five people, and having this just going out and playing the sequence of the album from start to finish, then taking 10 minutes and then having this interaction with our fans who have been going onto the website and voting for the encore and just giving them exactly what they want for the second half has been so rewarding. And I just feel so much closer to our fans, and I just will never forget this tour for the rest of my life. It's just been one of the highlights of my life, and being able to challenge our audience in that way and being able to challenge ourselves in that way has just brought the band so much closer that I'm so excited to go in and write another record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that, because people know that's what's coming. They come expecting to stand there and listen to 45 minutes of music or 40 minutes of music they haven't heard before. And it completely changes their attitude towards listening. And I think they really enjoy it too, because I think they feel less is demanded of them in a strange way. You need only listen and receive it. You don't have to scream and shout or sing along or say, this is my favorite or not. It's just music you might like. And then, as Amy says, then we take a break, and then we do have that show where people get to have that release and that catharsis of hearing their favorite song and knowing the words and all those things. So it's been the best of both possible worlds, really, for us. It's been a really good idea for us, I think.
It's not a sad album. It's more of a kind of ethereal, you know, you're taking ghosts and you're taking the, you know, the netherworld, and you're taking the idea of coming back and all of that and putting it in a pretty wild stew.
Ultimately, I guess part of the making of the record was reconciling ourselves to a lot of things about our own individual lives, about what was happening in our own individual lives, because everybody had a big year last year in their own way in the band, you know, and everybody had some pain and some stress and some worry in their lives. And I think we found a lot of salvation in each other and in the process of being in the band. And so these ghosts that were haunting us, the things, the people we missed, the regrets we had, the fears we had, I think we kind of wanted them close in some strange way. We wanted to communicate with them. We wanted to, certainly for me personally, a lot of what I wrote on the record is an attempt to summon my dad, to evoke him, like you would in a seance or something. And I think that, you know, ghosts for me went from being something I was fascinated and sort of terrified by to being something that I deeply hope exists and hope are all around us. And I got really involved in the idea of that. But you write in a strange way, it's always just the story of us. It's always the music and the lyrics and everything coming together is really the story of, that's the ineffable, mysterious part of a band, is that collective yes that you get to. And you don't really talk about it, because if you talked about it, maybe it would disappear, you know, it would evaporate. And we just got into a mood together, and we stayed in that mood, you know, and we trusted that mood, and it became what it is, you know.
I think too that when when Torkel's father passed away, it was like in the middle of writing the record. I mean, this was something that was reflective. It was immediate and present. And there's something hysterical and shocking about that kind of grief. And you haven't really reached sadness yet, because you're in the middle of it and you don't even know what's happening. And it kind of feels like you're losing your mind a little bit. So that's what I feel from the music, because, you know, we all lost Douglas. I mean, of course, he wasn't our father, but he was a big part of all of our lives, and we all loved him very much. And, you know, Chris and Torque have been friends since they were, you know, since you said, since they were eight. And that, I feel like that's what I can hear in it, is this kind of, it's more hysterical and not sad, because there is this exclamation mark and this question mark of where the hell did you go, rather than I'm so sad you're not here.
We do a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs as the bread, okay, and songs by others that you want to play in between. And it also gives you an opportunity, like having done 300 of these, you never know what you're going to get, but I'm now under moral obligation to play whatever you tell me to play. And when you hear these, I've sent them to all the bands, and they pop them into the van. They're like, oh my God, you actually did that. And I play it uninterrupted. There's no jingles. There's no nothing. It's just good old long segues.
Awesome.
So, two of your songs is the bread. And then, being that you live in Montreal, you can put the smoked meat and the and everything else in between. But you don't. But don't. You don't have to. Some bands like with the lettuce, and I'm like, no, don't just give me the damn music. There's a British band that shall go nameless that took 45 minutes to do this, and their tour manager was like, you have to sound check. No, we're still working on the pickle. I'm like, oh, leave me alone.
All right,
what do you think?
Two songs of ours. Well, I guess Your Ex-Lover Is Dead.
An Elevator Love Letter.
Yeah, okay, let's take those two as the bread. What do you put in between those?
We need a bunch of songs.
A bunch of songs.
Yeah,
because
we got
40
minutes.
You put...
I have a song that I would put... Sandwich. I would like to put in He's Funny That Way by Billie Holiday singing.
Yeah,
the version Billie.
Yeah. Billie Holiday. Thieves Like Us by New Order.
The Whole World. Outcast.
The Whole World. Outcast. Mr. Donut, Saint Etienne. It's a really good song, Kate, I'm telling you.
Do you know the first band that I had on my Sunday show 6 years ago was Saint Etienne?
Wow.
I still keep in touch with Sarah all the time because
we
kids were the
for
same
them
age.
Once. I love them so
amazing
much.
Amazing.
One of my favorite bands
amazing
of all time.
Band.
I worship them.
Mercy Me, Marvin Gaye.
Opus 40, Mercury Rev.
They're
nice.
They're such cool guys.
That's amazing.
They're so
That's
neat.
Good.
Islands in the Stream.
Kenny Rogers, Dolly Parton.
Video Killed the Radio Star, The Buggles.
Ask this woman, ask this girl what she sang in the school talent show.
What'd you sing in the school talent show?
What'd you sing in the school talent show? What'd you sing? They just said it.
Video Killed the Radio Star.
What'd she sing?
It's one of my favorite songs.
There you go.
How about... help me out here. Give another one while I think.
How about... Well, let's think of what would be... What is, like, essential to what Stars is. How about...
How about some Berlioz?
Berlioz?
Yeah. We actually used a sample from that. From Berlioz.
It's true. It's
you
true.
Play some, just, you know...
A little
it's a classical,
yeah.
Like...
Yes.
You know,
yeah, we'd be in trouble with the time factor.
That's true.
We'd have to play 1 minute of every other song you've given me.
Hyper Ballad by Bjork.
Okay.
That's Sully's favorite tune of all time.
Okay, so is that where you want to launch into your other piece of bread? Or do you have something else?
Oh, no, we did our two songs.
Oh, no. But remember, this is going to be the grand segue into your...
Yes, I think
song.
Hyper Ballad into Elevator Love Letter makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah, there we go. So that's enough songs, right?
Yeah.
Is that good?
Yeah. Okay, I have one other really one-minute assignment that's really dumb. Nobody needs another, hi, we're Dark and we're from Stars as an ID. So I want you to have a one-minute conversation about anything that you want to talk about in the next minute or so, and all you have to get in there is the name of the band,
okay,
and my radio name, Dennis the Menace.
Okay.
I heard you talking today in the van. You were talking to your wife on the telephone, and you were saying how... the light in this city of this beautiful city of San Francisco is almost too much.
Like, yes.
It's kind of terrifying.
It is.
And you feel like you're in this.
I feel like Kim Novak in Vertigo. I feel like I go into a trance
and I'm going to throw myself in the bay through sheer, because I'm just so beautiful, I can't even stand it. And the only thing to me that really has been equal as a member of STARS is laying my eyes upon the face of Dennis the Menace, who...
Well, thinking he's walking the streets is makes it all that much more insane.
He just has this Kim Novak thing about him. I don't know what it is, but I want to rescue him.
I've noticed something in this past day in this beautiful city, which is that you actually don't really have clouds. It's just broken up fog all times. Yeah. It's terrifying and beautiful and so spooky.
I think if you went out on a Sunday night in the right neighborhood, you could pick up a mermaid in this town.